Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Another hump day and another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and this is episode number 186. We are getting closer and closer to that magical 200 episode. And with me is Mr. Stephen Gies, my co-host. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. I'm down here in Alabama where it hits 74 degrees on a sunny day today. All the trees are budding. The flowers are starting to bloom. So it's a cool time of year. It's also cool to be able to kick back a little bit and relax. I mean, we've been working our butts off, haven't we? We've had like 3 months now of averaging about a book a week that we've been putting out. And, I mean, we've got like 14 in the pipeline right now, but none of them are, you know, by Friday, you know, by Monday, by Tuesday. Oh, no, we've got to get these changes in and the thing's supposed to be uploaded tonight, you know. So it's kind of nice to have a little bit of room. A couple of things we've been kind of coasting on, like getting back to the Star Child Saga series for Robert G. Willis Croft and a couple of others. We're bringing those back, too. And we've got some exciting new projects. Beam and I were both looking at photos by Angie Birmingham. She's a world-famous wildlife photographer based in Texas, and we're going to be publishing her book called Through the Lens, which is a how-to for photographers and with lots of cool pictures in there. And, man, we're flipping through her pictures. This woman knows how to take a photo, I'm telling you.
Yeah, she does some phenomenal pictures, eye for just – and some of the stuff that she captures – you know, that bird eating the bug, not quite catching it yet. I mean, catching it out of midair. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. But watch our newsletter, people, because over the coming weeks, we're going to alert you to a contest that Angie Birmingham is holding for amateur photographers, amateurs or professionals, I guess, where she posts a list of 9 kinds of photos she wants you to take. And then you edit them, and then you submit them to her, and you can win $50 gift card. And bragging rights is the important part, and, you know, making a connection if you're in the photography industry and stuff, too. So watch our newsletter for that. We're going to make sure we have that in next week. But we've got a new book out. It's in pre-sale everywhere except Amazon, because Amazon likes to go ahead and sell books anyway after when they're supposed to be in pre-sale. So Amazon is promising that if I order this book, I can get it next week. So I ordered it, and now they keep extending the date of when my book will be delivered. So I got a feeling it's not going to come during the pre-sale, but we'll have to see. We'll keep you posted. But, hey, let's talk about the book. It's A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes, and it's part of her new Bargainer's Fist series, which is going to have at least 3 books in it, and we're proud of that. There's a new trailer up for it. You'll hear a commercial for it tonight. So A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes. It's in pre-sale now for a March 12th release, but allegedly Amazon will mail you a print copy right away. We'll see. But remember that, A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes.
Yeah, and also available now, Keyed, A Lost Civilization, the Fourth Orc Chronicle, is in full release over on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books from. So get over there. Robert G. Willis Croft, a stellar sci-fi author. You're going to want this one. Like I said, it's the Fourth Orc Chronicle, so grab all 4 of them while you're over there if you haven't already. And if you want to call in tonight with questions or comments for tonight's guests, or you just have a comment about something else, you can do so a couple of different ways, and here's how you can do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right. Many of you have heard us talk about Story Empire, which is the storyempire.com. And Beam and I are both members of it. It's 12 authors who put out how-to material every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to our subscribers, and try to be supportive of indie authors and the whole writer's life and things like that, too. So I want to tout a series that I've got on there right now. Part two of my outlining series, Outlining Finesse, was posted the day before yesterday. It's a series on how to develop your own system for outlining, not how to do it my way, how to develop your own system and why. And yeah. A lot of the people who've been reading that series are coming back with, you know, I never was interested in outlining, but I'm trying some of this and I kind of like it. It's helping me out. So I want to urge people to go over there and check out storyempire.com, click on the blog and look for my latest article or any of the other good articles that are over there, and make sure you subscribe while you're there as well. So what have you been up to over there, Beam?
Well, my latest post was a week or so ago, I guess, maybe 2 weeks ago. And it's basically about writer responsibility. And by that, I mean, if you're writing a historical fiction novel, you want to make sure you get things right. You don't want to have your character running around in 1932 wearing Nike tennis shoes, high tops or whatever. You don't want to have them in the 1970s whipping out the Chromebook or a laptop and, you know, logging on to some internet website or something, because that stuff wasn't around back then. And, you know, you'd be surprised at the books that are out there that miss certain things. I just was reading something here not too long ago that was like that, and I had to do a quick little search and realize that they missed this particular thing that they were talking about by 2 years. And it's like, all right, well, you know, that stood out to me. It might not stand out to a lot of people. But anyway, this article is about, you know, doing your research and getting it right. And you have a responsibility to your readers. So my computer is doing some weird stuff. It's jumping and my taskbar just disappeared, but it's back. All right. Anyway, two minutes ago, you heard Stephen talk about our newsletter, and you can catch Angie Birmingham's contest in there. If you're not subscribed to our newsletter, why not? And here's how you can remedy that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right, we've got more books. That's what we do here at Fresh Ink Group. And this one by Gwen M. Plano is an Amazon number one bestseller. We like saying that. You say it too, Beam. Go ahead.
It's the number one bestseller. Hallelujah.
On Amazon. Yeah.
On Amazon.
So it's The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano. It's a thriller. And it's being very well received, getting great reviews. And like I say, sales are really taking off on this. We'll have to see where it ranks on our print bestsellers this week when we get down there. But check it out. Gwen M. Plano's The Soul Whisperer's Decision.
Yeah. And speaking of Gwen M. Plano, she's also got The Gift. This is one of the books in the Harbor Point series that the aforementioned Story Empire, the ladies of Story Empire, have all contributed to. There's 8 of them total. And The Gift is Gwen Plano's introduction to that. And she's also got Redemption. That's out as well. So get over to Amazon and just type in Gwen M. Plano. She's got a whole bunch of books, and she's a really stellar writer, and you're going to want to read her stuff. So what's the top sellers this week, Mr. G's?
Hey, we're looking at the print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group, and obviously we sell print books to distributors, so this is not retail sales. This is just an indicator of what kind of retail activity is happening out there, because the distributors order more books when they get sold. So entering our list this week, our 25th and 24th book are the same title, A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes, which just got put up and is in pre-sale, and people are already ordering it. It's entered our list this week for the first time. Above that, Carlisle Toms' Edge of Smoke, which is the sequel to The Calling Dream. And then above that, we always get a kick out of this, Dr. Marshall L. Shearer and Dr. Marguerite R. Shearer's Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication. This is the third edition. We put out the first edition almost 20 years ago. We're up to the third edition now. Marshall passed away about 8 or 9 years ago, but look at this. This book is out there making our top 25 bestseller list now. So there must be some rocky relationships out there, and we like that because it makes us money. All right. Back to Carlisle Toms again, the paperback edition of his Edge of Smoke. So that's both the paperback and the hardcover have made our list. And then above that, despite the fact that football season is over, Eight Hateful Miles, a sideline pass to Tennessee's fiercest rivalry by Stephen Hargis. He's a sports writer for the Chattanooga Times newspaper and several other outlets as well. And he put this together about the rivalry between high school football teams in Southeast Tennessee. And here it is, years later, still writing our bestseller list. Now let's get to some Robert G. Willis Croft. We've got the Ort Federation, To the Stars, the second Ort Chronicle. You heard Beam mention earlier that the fourth Ort Chronicle, Keed, just came out. You go above that one, Ran, A Civilization in Hiding. The third Ort Chronicle is next on our list. And above that, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Ort Chronicle. So that's all four Ort Chronicles. And that one is the hardcover edition that's selling. And the slot above it is the paperback edition of Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Ort Chronicle. So those Ort Chronicles are flying off the shelves. That's one of the kind of cool things about doing a series is the more books you have out there, when people discover you mid-series, then they like to go back and pick up those earlier copies. So
yeah,
sometimes a book four will goose book one sales better than book one sold when it first came out. So there's a lot to be said for series, and Robert G. Willis Croft is a master at that. Next, B.A. Johnson says he discovers the AME Church. It's the first of two books that are illustrated chapter books for children about a character, a little girl, who learns about her AME Church. Above that, David Carroll. Hello, Chattanooga. Famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. This is a very thick book, all color interior with historical photos going back as much as 100 years and everything you ever want to know about some cool stories of all the things that have happened with entertainment in that town. Above that, A.K. Winglers, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. And then above that, Mark Herndon, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. He is tied for third right now. We have a whole bunch of books tied for third place. Geez, look at all these books tied for third place. We got The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon. We've got The Daedalus Files, Seals Winged Insertion Command, SWIC, by Robert G. Willis Croft. That's going to be a collector's item soon, people. Get out there and get your copy because we're turning that into book two of the Star Child series here in the coming weeks, and then the Daedalus Files is going to fade away. So check that out. Now, earlier we mentioned The Soul Whispers Decision by Gwen M. Plano. It's the hardcover edition that's tied for third place right here, and this is a novel, Beam. It's a novel.
Yeah.
Who buys novels in hardcover anymore since books have become so expensive? Apparently,
yeah,
Gwen M. Plano's fans do, and that means we like them. Back to David Carroll, Volunteer Bama Dog. That's a look at Southernisms, people in the South, and his story about growing up in this region and basically what he's learned about being a media personality and having your finger on the pulse of the people of your hometown. Again, The Soul Whispers Decision by Gwen M. Plano. This is the paperback edition. And we're back to David Carroll again with I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders. This one's a hoot. What do you think, Beam?
It's a very, very funny book. I mean, it's laugh out loud funny. Stephen and I, when we were going through it, editing it and putting it together for publication, we were laughing out loud, just looking at it on Skype. So grab a copy.
Hey,
if you like to laugh, grab a copy.
Best advice I can give is if you need to pee, go before you read this book because you're going to laugh. All right, we've got Andrew McGregor's How to Paint an American, and that one's moving up the list again. Been a little while since we've heard from Andrew. He's a world traveler who sends us photos from,
Tokyo,
everywhere. Yeah, playing bagpipes.
Edinburgh, Scotland, Paris.
Yeah, competing in Highland Games. I mean, it's fun. He's got
he
a place
in Los
Colorado.
Angeles.
Yep.
He lives in Los Angeles, but his writing house is in Colorado.
Yep. So this is his first book, and it's doing pretty well for a first novel for an unknown author, and he's working on the second one, so we're looking forward to getting that. That's How to Paint an American by Andrew McGregor. Now, we're at the top five here, and this is very cool because we're working on two new books for Abigail Hugh Guinea. who is the former First Lady of Alabama A&M University when her husband was president for, I think, about 15 years or so. They recently retired, moved to Atlanta to be close to their grandkids. And she put together a book called There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation. Now, this is the Low Country of South Carolina. And it's a whole lot of black people, African-Americans, who went on to accomplish great things. And she's chronicled this. She's told their stories. We've included pictures or whatever. And this is just a nice piece of history, a nice inspirational thing maybe for young people. And this has been out for a couple of years now, and we're happy to see it's at number 5 on our print bestseller list right now. Good timing, because we're getting ready to put out her next book in about a month or so. Also, in that same vein, As We Remember, A History of the Women's Relief Corps in Beaufort, South Carolina by Dr. Najma Thomas has jumped up to number 4. There seems to be some new interest here, so that's very cool. Now, that gets us to our top 3, Beam. Now, college football season is over, right? I seem to remember Michigan winning the championship this year. But Dave Hooker's Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship, is in our number 3 slot right now. Actually tied for second. And let me get that correct. It's tied for second. And that's by Dave Hooker of Off the Hook Sports. I always have to say that a little bit slowly so I don't say hork like Beam likes to sometimes.
Off the hork.
Off the hork. off the spook horks. But Celebrate 98. If you're a college football fan, this is a great collector's item full of color photos, behind-the-scenes stories, and whatnot. So that gets us to our top 2. Now, number 2 is a book by a musician. Care to guess which it is, Beam?
I think that would probably be Mr. Mark Herndon, former drummer of the country supergroup Alabama.
Yeah, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. It's a look at all of his years. First of all, it's about him growing up and wanting to be a musician and you know, living the life and all that, and how he finally got to live the dream and tour the world and play to sold-out arenas and be famous and all that, but also, you know, develop some problems, have some rifts with the band and all that. And he tells the stories, warts and all, takes responsibility, and he isn't trying to be ugly or hurt anybody. He takes the high road in this. So it's just a wonderful memoir and something every country music lover should have on his shelf. So that's Mark Herndon's The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. So that gets us to number 1. And number 1 is by a retired lieutenant commander of the U.S. Navy. It's called Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate. And that's the paperback edition. So congratulations, Jerry. You're back in number 1 this week.
Back in number 1 again. All right. Now, listeners, if you miss an episode of this on a Wednesday night, if you're busy doing something else and you can't tune in, or you've got a favorite episode you want to listen to again and again, we have an archive, and here's how you can find that archive.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Submariner, 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Williscroft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
shocking proposal that changes everything. Desperate to honor his father's dying wish, Lakin Martin vows to do whatever it takes to save the family farm. Once the Army discharges him following World War II, Lakin returns to Missouri to find his legacy in shambles and in jeopardy. A foreclosure notice from the bank doubles the threat. He appeals to the local banker for more time, a chance to rebuild, plant, and harvest crops, and time to heal far away from the noise of bombs and gunfire. But the banker firmly denies his request. Now what? Then the banker makes an alternative proposition. Marry his unwanted daughter, Sarah Beth, in exchange for a 2-year extension. Out of options, money, and time, Lakin agrees to the bargain. Now he has 2 years to make a living off the land while he shares his life with a stranger. Read A Beggar's Bargain, Book 1 in the Bargainer series by best-selling author Jan Sykes. Available worldwide from multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. A Beggar's Bargain by Jan Sykes.
All right. Before we get started, we have a couple of comments on Twitter here from Verwin Greenhow. He says, a big hello from Florida. My son is an excellent artist, and he used to do like comic strips based on his career in the military, Air Force for 6 years, and then the Army for the last 16. Remember, folks, your post won't be – okay, he posted it. Folks, your posts won't be visible unless you use hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Thanks for reminding everybody of
that.
Yeah,
good reminder.
And he also posted a pretty cool picture here. He said, I found this photo I took a few years back when I lived in the Hiawatha National Forest in the UP. I've camped there when I was a kid. I camped up in
Hiawatha.
I have,
too. Not when I was a kid, but yeah.
This is probably 1974, I guess. Yeah, 74, camping out up there with the family, and had a good time. Okay, I just happened to find this pic today, and it's this bunny became lunch for a big old eagle. And you see, it looks like one of those bunny snow angels that Bunny didn't want to be a part of, but there he is.
I didn't realize what it was at first. Now I see it. Good fun.
All right.
Thanks for sharing that, Verwayne.
Go over to X and type in hashtag Fresh Ink Group and click on latest, and you'll see Verwayne's photo there. Okay. Yes. Wells Thompson is the co-author of the smash Kickstarter hits Frankenstein the Unconquered, Mechaton. The Cat Kid and the Rose, and is a regular contributor to Comic Book Yeti, a comic book review site specializing in indie comics and Kickstarter projects. He studies script and fiction writing at the University of Central Arkansas and lives in Chicago, where he waits tables and fosters several cats at a time, and that is very cool. You can follow him on Twitter at WellsTomp, T-H-O-M-P, or sign up for his newsletter at Comics, Cats, and Cocktails.
I'm picturing he's taking the order and the cats are going and getting their water and their utensils and stuff. Okay, our other guest is Dalton Shannon. He is the co-author of Descent into Dread, Frankenstein the Unconquered, and Mechaton. And he's the co-writer and artist behind the short comics on DaltonKShannon.com. And at the end of the show, we're going to ask him to remind you about that website and even spell it for you so you can find that, DaltonKShannon.com. He studied creative writing and digital filmmaking at the University of Central Arkansas and now resides in Little Rock, where he slaves away working for the corporate man and drawing his little cartoons. You can follow him on Twitter at DaltonKShannon. Or on Instagram at Dalton K. Shannon. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Yeah, welcome.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So first off, are you both natives to Arkansas? And if so, have you lived anywhere else? Well, obviously, Wells is living in Chicago, but have you lived anywhere else? And what brought you to Chicago, Wells?
Yeah, we're both from the Central Arkansas area. We met there. We grew up there and then went to school there, and then have just kind of scattered around, sometimes coming back, sometimes staying away. Right before the pandemic, I moved to Nashville, and then last year I moved up here to Chicago. And the reason why being mostly my wife, she is a microbiologist and has a really incredible job and got a good job offer, and I can do what I do anywhere. So I
Ooh.
Followed her where she wanted to go.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Dalton?
Born and raised Arkansas, I guess it's close to 2 years now, my wife and I moved up to Green Bay, Wisconsin, just to try something new. Had a great time up there, and then family brought us back here to Arkansas. Love the Midwest, love the South. Don't love the humidity of the South, but that's a whole other thing.
Hmm. Well, if you were in Green Bay, that means you love snow.
No, yeah.
The weather, thanks to our friend global warming, the winters were not quite as harsh as we had been led to believe.
Yeah.
All right.
So did you guys know each other as kids at all, or when did you meet?
We met in college.
That'd be college. Yeah.
Yeah, creative writing classes. We just vibed with each other, really liked what we were putting out. Dalton once wrote, based on a prompt that he had gotten an hour earlier, a story about a guy going on a blind date and slowly figuring out that his date is a velociraptor in a wig. And I just thought, yeah, I want to be friends with that guy.
God, I've had that happen, but it was a pterodactyl. It was ugly.
Oh.
It was just ugly. Well,
pterodactyls are even worse.
Yeah. So what kind of kid were you, Dalton? Were you into stories and comics and all that from an early age, or were you out doing other stuff?
Oh, no. I was obsessive about stories, really. I was born in 92, so I was prime age for the 90s slew of superhero cartoons, so Batman, X-Men, Spider-Man, Superman, all of those. I ingested them. And when I was probably 8, I stumbled across like an actual comic book of Spider-Man. It was this really striking John Romita Jr. cover, and fell in love with comics. And I was like, cartoons? What? No, I want comics. And so basically all of my youth was spent reading comics, making comics, and there's giant monster movies, video games. I didn't get outside much is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Wells? Did you get outside, or are you thoroughly untanned?
Oh, no. No, I was a pasty band kid. I was not an outside sports kind of guy. I didn't really get into comics until later in life, though. I was always really interested in stories and storytelling, but more so novels and film. And it wasn't until college and after that, really through Dalton, as it would happen, that I really discovered kind of what an interesting medium comics were and how they could tell really compelling stories.
Well, it's definitely a rising genre or format, I guess I should say, because there's lots of genres.
Medium, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely growing. It's steadily growing, and against some of the other categories, which are not growing lately. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. What you mentioned that you were a band kid?
Yeah, I played saxophone for 14 years, and I still have it, and I don't play it as often as I should, but and I also play guitar, and at some point I knew how to play piano. I don't think I could anymore, but yeah, I love music. It's never been something I've wanted to pursue professionally, but that's what I do in my spare time a lot. Most of the time is play the guitar and just kind of tune out.
Yeah, you playing cover songs? You writing your own things? What are you doing?
Oh, I'm terrible at writing lyrics. I am a bad poet. but yeah, no, I play folk songs and covers from Death Cab for Cutie and Jonathan Colton and stuff that I like.
Oh, cool.
No Slayer.
No, yeah.
No, I do have a double octave Schecter that plays really, really fun metal licks, but mostly like System of a Down and sort of that generation of new metal, which I'm a little bit embarrassed by, but it is what it is.
And, you know, I think that's the first time on this podcast we've heard the phrase death cab for cutie. So you listeners, if you had that phrase on your scorecard, call in for your prize.
All right.
We're going to roll another commercial here.
Yeah. And we are talking with Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon. And if you have a question or a comment for them, you can call 516-453-9902 and be a part of the conversation.
Sarah Jameson, a nurse at County Central Hospital, survives an accident that kills her two young children. While comatose, she travels into the heavenly realm where she visits with her precious little ones. She is given a choice, return to her husband, Jack, or remain with her children in their celestial home. Jack was not in the fated automobile. Though he heard the crash and ran to help, there was nothing he could do. He suffers the loss of his children, fears the potential demise of his wife, and wonders about his own sanity. His struggle with PTSD from his military years has returned, and at times he cannot distinguish between the present and the past. An accident tragically changed the lives of this young family, but out of sorrow emerges unexpected blessings. You'll be deeply moved by Gwen M. Plano's new novel, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano.
Available now at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Google Books and all the places that you buy your books. So get over there and grab a copy of that.
Number one Amazon bestseller.
That's right. Let's keep touting that. Now, both of you gentlemen mentioned wives. Tell us a little bit about your family. You got children? Are your wives into the comic book things? Or do they say, hey, you guys are nerds. Go do your own comic book things. We're going to be over here doing, you know, surgery on something.
Extremely no children. But
I've never heard it put that way, but sure. Extremely no children.
As far from having children as you could possibly be, at least on my side. My wife is extremely supportive of my comics career and is actually co-authoring a comic that we're going to be debuting shortly. Just seeing me get into it and really get to express myself inspired her, and she wanted to help me tell a story. So, very lucky to have her. Her name is Brianna Thompson. As indicated, she's a microbiologist and the smart one, and I'm lucky to have her.
Yeah, okay. Sounds like it.
I've got the missus. Her name's Alexis. Very, very supportive, very sweet, but could not care less about comics or making them. She is happy to let me tell my silly little stories over in this corner, and she's got her little corner. And honestly, I think that's the best of both worlds, because if we were both into this as hard as I am, it would get overwhelming very quickly. So we each get to have our own hobbies, and we get to meet back in the middle when we want some human connection.
That seems to work well for a lot of people. That's good.
Yeah. So now you talked about you have your hobbies. So what are the two of you obviously have day jobs then. What are your day jobs?
I work for a university. So I run admin for the film department. It's a pretty great gig.
Sounds like it.
The University of Central Arkansas, where I went to school, and everybody I work with is great. It actually gives me a lot of time to work on the comic stuff. So no complaints here.
Personally, I prefer to use the term freelance rather than unemployed, but. most of the time, I have been in the food service industry. I am taking a hiatus from that, possibly indefinitely, But certainly at the moment, I am not working at a restaurant right now for my own physical and mental well-being. But I do, I am an editor, and I do freelance editing for comic books and novels and various other things, just anything an author needs help with.
Cool. Oh, cool. Now, yeah. Dalton, now you studied writing and digital filmmaking. Do you have the time to do films, or have you done films, or is it just something that you studied and you moved on?
Oh, no. My contempt for film continues to grow exponentially year by year. When I went to school for film, I was really kind of looking for an avenue towards, like, television. I only really wanted to be a writer, and stepping headfirst into, like, actual film production was a nightmare. We actually handled, like, an entire like five-episode web series that was really fun. I had a good time with it. I wrote the script and I was on set every day. But man, I do not want to be in, like, it's just a lot of work and a lot of moving parts, and it can all go wrong and it's not your fault, you know? So I like to have a little bit of control with the writing itself. Comics, thankfully, there are still some moving parts, but it's not near on the financial stakes of film or anything. So I also just don't care about film as much as I used to. So it's very much if television calls, maybe, but film, no, thank you.
Yeah, a lot of writers who aspire to write for television or films, they think that it's a very collaborative process when you're a newcomer who doesn't have a name for yourself yet, and it tends not to be. You tend to just lose control of your script, and they go off and do what they want to do with it. You got to become kind of famous and become a known factor before you get invited to sit on the set in most cases and participate in rewrites and all that kind of stuff too. But yes, it's a lot more work than most think and can be very, very frustrating because you're not the final decision maker. When you write your books,
yeah,
when you write your comics, you decide. They decide how to make a movie.
And I love the collaborative nature. Like, comics is the closest you get to having full control as a writer and having that collaborative essence. And I love people coming together to make something great. It's film was taxing, and it just wasn't my bag.
Hmm. So, you're talking about collaborating.
I love
it. Yeah. How do you two work together? I mean, how do you get your projects done? What do you divide up things? Do you go back and forth? Do you actually communicate while you're writing? What's the process?
Most of the time, when we settle on an idea, we choose ahead of time kind of who's going to take point on that project. And that person will write the first draft, then pass it to the next person. They'll write the second draft, then back and forth until we're both kind of happy with what we have. And in the events, which doesn't happen very often, usually we're able to find good compromise where we're both happy. But in the event where there's just an impasse and we need to go one way, but we can't agree which way it is, we've already decided ahead of time the person on point gets to make the final call. So it's sort of a negotiated co-parenting situation.
Okay. Now, you guys don't actually do the drawing, though, correct?
We do not. And that
we wouldn't have careers if that happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so you I'm guessing you've got people that you work with that take your ideas and they just run with it then.
More or less.
Yeah.
So we're pretty thorough with our scripting, but we choose people that we think are going to bring like the most to the story with their style. But we also give them a lot of freedom to express themselves and to tell the story in the best way possible. So for the book that we're doing right now, Mechaton, which is very sort of Saturday morning cartoon, sci-fi comedy, very high energy, lots of action. Fernando Pinto is the artist on the project, and he brings a lot of that energy and style, and really sells the ideas that we've presented to him with really bright expression and big climactic energy. And then same with the colors with Megan Casey. She colors it with these really bright primary flat colors that just make it feel, again, very like Saturday morning cartoon or Toonami-esque. Feels very familiar while still being really unique.
Now, this whole creative process, okay, I'm a novelist, a writer, I write short stories. I work by myself. So the collaboration thing, we had an author on here a couple weeks ago, and he had collaborated with another author. And I find it fascinating that two people can sit down and come up with these stories. Is this something that took you guys a while to get into this thing, or was there like this chemistry like right off the bat? Because it's going to take a chemistry for two people to create, and then a chemistry to bring in the artists, and so everybody's realizing the same, project. They want the same end result. Was there a chemistry early on, or was it something that you've developed over time?
I think it's a little bit of both. It helped that when we met in college, we were both in writing classes that had like workshops in there. So everyone would kind of get together and read whatever story they had written that week, and we would all kind of talk about it. And so we got used to the process of workshopping, and then our individual voices. So when we actually started working together, it did take some like figuring out. Like Wells had to actually like learn how to write comics, and I had to like learn how to bring someone into the entire process. And it was a learning curve for both of us, but thankfully we both kind of complement each other's writings in a great way. Wells is really great at the big picture, at making sure that we are kind of moving in the right direction thematically, that the characters kind of stay true throughout, all that big stuff. And I tend to have the strengths in the moment-to-moment actions. So the energy and the momentum carries through. The dialogue is really sharp. And then both of our character works were shining through before we even got started. So it took some time, but once we kind of figured out what each one did best, and it just so happened that that was where the other was a little deficient at, we were able to make a really good partnership. And through that partnership, our deficiencies have, I won't say gone away, but like we've been able to grow as writers. And we're much better for the collaboration.
Wow, that
sounds
great.
Our solo stuff has gotten a lot better as a result of working together, I think. So I can agree with that.
Definitely a good fit, yeah. I'm still curious about working with the artists, too. We're doing book covers here at Fresh Ink Group on a regular basis, and we have a digital artist on staff, but book covers tend to get lots of revisions. Oh, no, that's not the right kind of barn, and can we move this a little closer to that? And wait a minute, it's the grass should be brown instead of green and things like that. I mean, how is it that you convey to the artist what it is that you want? Do you give him a description of what each image should contain, and then do you wind up having to do revisions? What's that process like?
Right. So the process of writing a novel is sort of, using words, you're sort of building the whole picture yourself and using words to have the reader kind of build it in their imagination. A script sort of works that in the same way, but you're not talking to the reader, you're talking to the artist. So it can be a little bit strange sometime reading a script because there's the directions aren't oftentimes very literary, but the end result comes together to make a coherent story. So yeah, we really are just giving the artist instructions for not necessarily point by point everything in every panel. We give them a lot of room to elaborate and sort of bring their own personality into it. But we create the structure, we create the important points, the action that needs to be present in each panel and on each page. that then allows them to kind of fill in that skeleton with their own ideas and their own expression.
Yeah, and we always trust our artists to kind of have more or less a final say on what goes on that page. If there is something imperative that they've left out, of course we're going to mention something. But, like, they know what is going to look best panel to panel and page to page better than we ever could with just a script. So we always tell them, look, here's the script. Here's, like, a panel breakdown. But if this doesn't work, if it's not as exciting, if we can't fit all of these panels on a single page, do, like, take the initiative and do your thing. We trust you. And especially with Nando on Mechaton, we have this simpatico where we're back and forth, we're playing, and what he turns out every single time is better than any script could have
considered. Oh, that's always
fun. And our
fun.
Scripts are pretty good.
Yeah.
It also, we have as many conversations as we can about, like, you know, who the characters are, what the overall kind of message of the story is, what the theme is, what kind of energy we want to bring to it, so that by the time the finished page happens, very rarely do we need a ton of revisions because they sort of get the picture before it even gets to that point.
Well, that's what I was about to ask. Have there been occasions where you've seen the images and then gone back and tweaked your text?
Oh yeah.
Normally when we get the art in, we're like, oh, we don't need these words here at all. Like, or we have way too many words. We're crowding the art. And there's been, I mean, honestly, that is the most common edit, is we will get the pages back and dialogue is just thrown out the window because we don't need it anymore.
Yeah, and in the most extreme example I can think of, the way that Fernando was drawing a certain character in the book named Hex changed their personality from kind of very bubbly and positive and happy-go-lucky to more sort of stern, serious, straight man in the situation, and that worked so much better with the energy that the other characters were bringing and the kind of over-the-top ridiculousness of the situations that they find themselves in. It made that character into what I feel is one of the strongest in the book.
Hmm.
All right, so we are going to take a break. We are talking to Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon, comic creators. And after the ad, we'll come back. We've got a caller on hold, so hold on there, armpit of Florida. We're coming at you.
A grand epic saga by Robert McKenzie, the Chair series spans centuries, touching the lives of 22 generations of related mothers and daughters, their stories witnessed by a simple pine chair. Resolute, strong, loving, and fiercely protective, these women must strive to pass their values to new generations in a world of racism and sexism, politics, scandal, fashion, and even the rise and dominance of baseball. They live in privilege and poverty, with faith and despair, relishing every moment of love, even as they suffer abiding grief. Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, spans the 1600s through World War I, while Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love, follows these women's descendants into modern times and beyond. In Volume 3, 7, 8, and 9, the chair flashes back to pre-Civil War America, featuring a woman from the Second Mayflower, her daughter, the black market Irish lace importer, and a Canadian World War I fighter pilot. Volume 4, Punch, Pass, and Kick, jumps forward with a gunboat battle, one courageous cattle drive, a suffragette in the ocean liner industry, a mysterious unpublished manuscript, and more. A blend of history and philosophy told through satire and parody, the story of the chair could be found in some old trunk in any dusty old attic. But Mackenzie breathes it alive with riveting tales that span the real and the imagined. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, the Chair series by Robert Mackenzie is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
Welcome to American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. Darkness is where you can explore the mysterious fires of Yellowstone National Park. Be awestruck by the sheer power of a god in yellow whose very breath lays out the cosmos with his maddening glow. Recall what it's like to be there for a friend, even if that friend is hiding something insidiously infectious. Explore the poetry and short stories out of a manic, depressive mind set to entertain and also remind you that there's a way out of the darkness. Sometimes you just have to be like our local sin eater, Tucker, and say, enough is enough. So come on in and dive into American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebooks.
All right, get out there and grab that. That's a really cool book, American Darkness. It's a series of some really dark but very thoughtful and thought-provoking poems and short stories. We had Stephen Skibicki on as a guest here a month and a half ago. So go look in the archive. Go over to YouTube and go to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel and find that episode. He's a very interesting young man. So
yeah, that's the first book we put out too, where all of the images, and there's about 60 of them, are AI generated.
Yeah.
So he had some fun with that too.
So we're going to go to the phone. This is a longtime friend of the show on here. I recognize the number in the armpit of Florida. How you doing tonight, Mr. Verwayne Greenhall?
Hey, Verwayne.
I'm doing well, sir. Hi. Hello, Stephen.
Yeah, I've been sitting here for this whole podcast with your image on my screen, so I like this image.
I watched that happen. That was the strange thing about it.
Wow. Yeah.
I saw the bunny, and I saw in the UP, the eagles all over, and they were just circling around and around and around, and the next thing I know, this big female comes swooping down, and wham, that bunny was gone.
Dinner.
Yeah, and I live on a lake, so I watch the bald eagles circle over the water and swoop down and then get a big fish that's almost too big for them to carry.
Go fishing, yep.
Yeah, go fishing. So what do you think of our guest tonight, Verwayne?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like I said, my son was an artist from the word go. He was very young and he was doing all kinds of weird things. But then he ended up designing the company coin when he went into the Air Force. During basic training, he designed the company coin. So, but I helped him put up a bunch of series of stories with his material, and that's what I was curious. I didn't have time to go find their material yet, but I was curious if they make a series of comic stories that form like a run-in television show, or do you have a series like the old Twilight Zone program where every episode is different under the same general title?
We've done both. So our first published book, Descent into Dread, it was a horror anthology, sort of Twilight Zone-esque in that way, where every story was radically different, just under a general theme of New Age horror. But there were creature features in there. There were dystopias. There was a really bad entry-level job. There was everything you can think of. For horror stories in that book. Whereas Mechaton, which is what we're working on now, is more like a TV show where it's a little bit episodic, but there's an overarching story and everything is connected.
Okay. Like I said, my son did his was episodic all the way through, and one show, one strip would build on the next, or the next would build on the previous. So, but I always wondered how you folks did that kind of stuff. I write, so I just do what I do. But I know that the mind of a comic designer is completely different than a novelist. So
yeah, we move away from them in the lunchroom.
Exactly. It really all depends on project to project. I don't think the mind of a novelist is that far removed from the mind of a script writer or a comics artist. It's all storytelling. It's the mode of storytelling that you are employing. So a novel is, closer to like a film where it's all one big unit of story, whereas comics come out in installments, much like television episodes. And so you kind of get to play around with form and format in comics, especially where it's such a low barrier for entry, and you can fail and it can still be successful. Like comics are a great playground.
Oh yes.
Oh, yeah. I also sort of subscribe to the I remember hearing Aaron Sorkin, writer of a bunch of famous TV show West Wing and whatnot, say if your characters die at the end, it's a movie. If what you're interested in is like the place that they're in and telling stories about that, it's a TV show. So it's less about your state of mind or like how you tell stories and more just what story are you telling and how it will reveal itself. Cool thing with comics is you can do both. You don't need to worry about whether or not it's a single unbroken narrative or more episodic. It all fits into one home.
Do you guys think you have a graphic novel or two in your future?
Oh, absolutely.
We do.
We have a graphic novel currently waiting to be drawn. We have, I think, two or three actually.
Yes, no, we've gone into the graphic novel formats. It's still chapter based, but it's all one complete narrative, much like a novel. So it's just waiting for art at this point.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thanks for calling in, Verwayne.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoy hearing from you, and appreciate your posts on Twitter.
Yeah, and Verwayne is going to be a guest on the show next month, so keep your eyes and ears open to that newsletter.
Yes, and any carnage that you can photograph, throw it on Twitter so we can look.
Thank you.
Thanks, Verwayne. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, okay. You guys have been talking about Mechaton. Why don't you tell us what it's about?
Yeah. Mechaton is a all-ages sci-fi comedy comic about a brother and sister that discover an alien glove that turns anything it punches into a mech. So anything from a hot dog cart to a house and bigger and smaller and everything in between. It's a lot of fun. It's super funny. Has sort of a Saturday morning cartoon feel, very Scott Pilgrim meets Pacific Rim. And we are currently doing the pre-orders for the first full volume, so the first five issues combined into one book, on Kickstarter right now.
Oh, okay. Well, how can people find that on Kickstarter?
Type in my name, Wells Thompson, type in Mechaton, should be the first thing that comes up, or you can go to my website, wellsthompson.com, shows up, or first thing you'll see, you can click on it, and it'll take you right to the page.
Okay, cool. Now, what's this anthology of horror stories that you guys have done?
Yeah, that's Descent into Dread, was published in 2020 through Caliber Comics. It was a lot of fun, and also since it was our first big project, an enormous headache. It was born from when Wells and I first started working together and wanting to go into comics specifically. We sat down and tried to figure out the best avenue forward, and what we settled on was 8-page stories. So we would just kind of throw out an idea. 8 pages was a great tool to kind of explore an idea that maybe didn't have enough legs for a full story, but was enough for like a little zinger. So we would write the scripts. We'd do sci-fi, horror, some all ages adventure stuff, and then I would sit down and I would draw them. And then we would print them off, staple them together, and take them to conventions. And we found that our horror series, Descent into Dread, sold better than most of them. And at a con, we met an editor from Caliber Comics who was very interested in stories and hooked us up with some like professional artists who could bring them to life much better than I could. And through meeting with all of these artists and hunting down a few on our own, we built this anthology that was full of creature features, cosmic horror, slasher, the whole gamut of horror tropes. And then we put them all in a big book, and Caliber published it, and it's on Amazon right now. If anyone is curious to check that gem out, but it's very Twilight Zone. They're all short reads, 8 pages, so you can kind of dip in and out with whatever you like.
And to be clear, there's two issues out?
Descent into Dread was one complete anthology, so it's actually just like a graphic novel.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it has, how many stories are in that, Wells?
12 stories. So there's 12 8-page
12
stories in
there.
Yeah, by 11 artists total. And that book, as well as some others that we've worked on, are also available on the Kickstarter page. If you get the Mechaton book, you can also add on that book, so you can save on shipping.
Oh, cool.
But yeah,
I like that pitch. Order all my books, save on shipping.
Exactly. get the whole
handle. I'm going to use that.
One thing that is super fun about that anthology is a couple of years down the line, some of those artists that we were able to get a hold of have kind of grown in their own personas. Mary Landreau works with, not Rob Liefeld, the other one, Todd McFarlane, who is one of the founders of Image. Serge Acuna is doing stories for DC now, Nightwing. Cass Lobo is blowing up, so there's some really great art in there by some artists that are really becoming getting the exposure that they deserve.
Wow, that's terrific. Now, there's a title here that I like, The Cat Skin and the Rose. What's that about?
Mm-hmm. That's me.
Skinning cat.
That is a fantasy romance novel that I wrote with art by Rachel Disler. That book is still in production. It is available for pre-order, but it's about two women in a sword fighting contest. The winner will become the queen of this kingdom. The loser will be dead. And as they fight, they develop sort of a respect for each other and then eventually realize there might be something more there, and the tension builds and builds, and we see what happens. It's very Princess Bride sort of low-level fantasy, adventure romance.
Cool. Okay. Now, Dalton, you've got a series of novels for sale in March. What's this about?
Oh, yeah. So coming in March, March 22nd, I'll be launching on Amazon and all the good book marketplaces a new series of novelettes called David and the Ostrich Riders. It's a very kind of tongue-in-cheek high fantasy series with a lot of heart about a boy named David who stumbles into a world of weird fantasy, knights that ride ostriches, dogs that look like scorpions. It's all just kind of, it's crazy, right? And it's going to be told through monthly installments of these novelettes. So, you're getting about maybe 30, 40 pages at a time, and it's a fast clip. I kind of wanted the publishing structure to be kind of like a monthly comic, but it's all prose. And so each month you'll get the new installments, fantastic covers from Heather Vaughn, who we've worked with on our Frankenstein comic, and designed by Brenda Snell, who is designing basically everything we do now. So it's exciting because I get to stretch my prose muscles, which have kind of atrophied since doing scripts for so long. So I get to kind of play in a playground that is completely solo. And it's been really exhilarating. I've been loving it.
Now, are you using cool. Amazon's Vela to put those out, or are you just putting them up for sale?
I'm sorry?
Are you using Amazon's Vela to put those out as episodes, or are you just putting them up for sale?
That has not been completely decided just yet. We know that the e-books are going to go up for sale, and that I'll be printing them off physically for, like, convention sales. But we still have some things to nail down before we launch in March.
Okay. Now, Wells, you've got another book going to Kickstarter in April, Smut?
Yeah, that's correct. it's a slice of life erotic comedy about three women trying to kind of sew their love lives back together. Drawn by Bianca Milanes. I hope I didn't butcher that. It's a lot of fun. It's very if you're into that genre of sort of not safe for work erotic comics, it is going to be a lot of fun and exactly what it sounds like. That will be coming up sometime in April. We'll be debuting that on Kickstarter. I have a lot of friends from the comics community that are drawing covers for that. So keep an eye out. It's going to be really exciting.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So we are going to play the last couple of ads here. When we get back, we've got some more questions. Stick around. We are talking with Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon, comic creators. You can still call in. You still got a little bit of time left. 516-453-9902.
I'm David Carroll, and I'm proud of my recent books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, Volunteer Bama Dog, and Hello Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. Like many folks, I spend too much time on social media, but I put that time to good use. For years, I've been collecting social media misspellings, misinterpretations, and other mishaps, from tweets, text messages, even the signs you see at stores and on the highways. I've collected the funniest foul-ups in my latest book, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, David Carroll's homemade social media blunders. I top them off with my own snarky comments, and they're illustrated by a talented artist, my friend Mike Salter. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in the book, more than 400 of them. We all make mistakes, and sure, you can blame it on spell check, but maybe, just maybe, we didn't pay enough attention in English class. Either way, this book will bring a smile to your face or to the face of someone you love. We can all agree what the world needs now is laughter, and lots of it. I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats.
In the Pruitt-Igo slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him. Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now, Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
All right. So we are talking with Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon. Again, you still got a little bit of time, 516-453-9902. So you guys, you meet your fans, do you do meet and greets, Comic-Con type of things? And if so, what kind of fan reaction are you getting?
We love going to Comic-Cons, to conventions and meeting fans. And the reactions are like why we do it and have encouraged us to keep going even when it gets increasingly difficult. I can think of so many really wholesome interactions that I've had from like a kid in a full Flash costume, the comic book character, I mean. probably 6 years old, coming up and asking about the book, and his face just lighting up with the most excitement, trying to convince his dad to get them because he wanted the cool book with the awesome Transformer gloves, the Power Ranger awesomeness. that lives rent free in my head, absolutely. And we've been to conventions where we go 1 year, sell a book, and then the next year people will come back and say, hey, I really like this. Can I have more of what you guys? What else have you guys done? That nothing really gets me going like that kind of interaction.
Cool. Wow. You got a story, Dalton?
Oh man, no. The Flash kid always takes the cake.
it is the best one.
Most of our favorite interactions are kids who come to the table and really latch on to Mechaton and their eyes grow really big. There's been a few times where we have shown Mechaton to like industry professionals, and it makes me grin a little bit with no small amount of self-satisfaction when like we will pitch them the book, their eyes will get really big, and then they will they'll read the copy of the book and they'll be like, wow, that was something, guys. And I can't tell if they're being, facetious or not, but I take it anyway. And
yeah, sure.
I'm beaming the rest of the day. And, so we have so much fun at conventions, and they're exhausting, but in a good way. And, like, you come out the other end just, like, stumbling because of the exhaustion of a whole weekend of conventions, but, like, just energized to go back and make more.
Well, yeah, impressing industry professionals, that's great. Making a six-year-old face light up, that's greater.
Yes,
absolutely. I'll say my favorite thing that the reason I'm happy I made Mechaton is pretty exclusively just for this one story. My a friend of mine back in Nashville is a middle school teacher, and she got our books as like reading material for a classroom, just so during break kids could like flip through it if they wanted to and sort of have something to read instead of being bored. And there was this one kid that had anger issues and was having trouble at home, and she didn't know what to do with him. She gave him the book, and he spent the next like 3 or 4 days tracing over every page to try and learn how to draw like Fernando.
Wow.
And asks every day for like 2 months, when's the next issue coming out, which motivated me to get the next issue out, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. All right. So we're talking about six-year-old fans. What about other young people or old people who want to get into doing what you guys do? Do you have any advice for them?
Don't. For anyone who wants to get into a creative field, I wholeheartedly endorse it. The biggest barrier that I personally found is the actual doing it. Like my whole life I wanted to do comic books, and it took until I was probably in my early to mid 20s when nothing was materializing, and I had to realize that like, oh, I have to make comic books, right? I can't just write scripts anymore. So no matter how bad the book was, I had to, like, sit down and draw it and put it out into the world. And it was because of those terrible little zines that we made that we actually caught the attention of the stories are pretty good. The art's atrocious. But, like, it's because of those zines that we were able to catch the eye of an editor, and it's because of just sitting down and doing it, no matter how bad it was, that we got to where we are. So, like, the biggest advice I can ever give anyone is just sit down and do it. It's going to be bad. But you have to get – it's that, the 10,000 hours? You got to get through that stuff as fast as you can.
Got to churn through the bad before you get to the good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know the math. We might still be in our 10,000 hours stage, but, you know, we'll let you know.
Yeah, that's excellent advice, definitely.
I'll say that I think our sort of joking answer is don't, but I do think that people who are, like, serious about getting into – a creative field kind of need to be told that, not so that they get discouraged, but so that they understand that it's not going to be easy, and they shouldn't expect it to be. You do it for the love.
It's a
job.
You
don't do it for the, you don't do it because you think you're going to get rich or you think you're going to, like, become the next best-selling author, because, you know, maybe eventually that might happen, but it's going to be a slow grind. And when eventually people start saying that you're, like, brand new talent and that you came out of nowhere, you're going to know that you spent 5-10 years working your ass off trying to make something really cool, and people are only noticing now. So you need to have that love in your heart for the creative process before you try and go out and be something huge.
Yeah, there really is no such thing as an overnight sensation, because those people that pop up overnight spent years working on what they've been doing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. We recently, I think, it was like last year, the year before, it was either the Ringo Awards or the Eisners. It was like best new writer was a guy named Ram V, who any comics fan listening knows exactly who I'm talking about. He's currently doing Detective Comics. He's currently doing really big name DC books. And that's sort of where people caught on to him. But anyone who really has been in the indie scene for a while knows that he's been putting out books for like 5-10 years. And he should have been getting recognized, you know, as a new talent around the time he was making The Savage Shores, not, you know, Swamp Thing and Batman. But that just comes with the territory.
Okay, now, how can people contact you? Facebook, website?
Follow you.
My home address. My home address is 716. You can find me on through social media, on Twitter, at WellStomp, just my name minus the last three letters. As long as Twitter exists, which, you know, who knows at this point how long that's going to be, you can contact me more directly through my website, wellsthompson.com, and there you'll find links to everything that I make, as well as our newsletter, Comics, Cats, and Cocktails, which we put out through Substack. That's really how you find the most consistent stuff that we're putting out, sneak peeks of pages, what we're reading, cocktail recipes, pictures of foster cats, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the short list of how you can keep up with me and Dalton. And then Dalton has his website, Dalton K. Shannon, and no social media, because rightfully he believes it's toxic.
It is a blight, and I refuse to partake.
All right. Yeah, it can get ugly, there's no doubt. But we've been talking to Wells Thompson and Dalton K. Shannon, comic book creators. It's been a lot of fun talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
It's
been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, listeners, next week it's going to be a repeat of our episode featuring author Jenny Wong, who's a Texas real estate developer who also likes to tell saucy stories in her spare time. And then after that,
After that is Joe Suchek or Socek. I'm going to find out how to pronounce his name when he's on the air. I'll tell you that. I might be mangling his name, but I believe it's Joe Suchek. Yeah. He'll be up, and then after that.
After that, one of our favorite authors who we've known for a long time, Jan Sykes, and we finally just had the privilege of publishing a book for her. That's the book A Beggar's Bargain that we talked about earlier. So we're going to be talking to Jan Sykes. After that?
After that, we've got Hayden Panettiere's brother. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if they're even related.
Actually, he died.
Vincent Panettiere will be in here, and he's we don't know much about him, but I've read his resume, and he's quite impressive, so tune in for that. And after that?
After that, you heard Verwaine Greenhoe on the phone earlier. He's going to be our guest, and we're going to thank him again for this lovely image that I've been staring at for more than an hour now. This poor little bunny was walking through the snow, and then you can see the wing marks where a friendly eagle picked him up and gave him a ride because his feet were cold. Yeah, so Verwaine Greenhoe will be next. And after that?
After that, we've got Caleb Palmquist coming in to talk about what he does, what he writes about, and all kinds of cool stuff. And after that?
After that, author Peter Crowley, who I'm not very familiar with yet, but that's a fun thing about this show. Sometimes it's people we know well. Sometimes it's people we're just getting to know. So Peter Crowley will be next. And after that?
And after that, this is in the tail end of May. We've got some others that are going to be coming up before this young lady, Colleen Story. We will be talking to her, and I believe that's the last week of May. She's got a new book coming out around that time, so we got her in here to get her some publicity, so to speak. And don't worry, we've got more coming up.
All right, so our guests have been Wells Thompson and Dalton K. Shannon. Thanks again for stopping by, you guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, happy to be here.
All right.
And keep us in mind when you guys are releasing new stuff. Send any press releases on new stuff coming out to sam@freshinkgroup.com, and Sam will put it in our newsletter.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, and thanks, listeners, for spreading the word and helping the Voice of Indie podcast become more and more popular every week, and we'll see you next time, except next
time
will be a rerun, so we'll see you the next time after that.
Yeah, all right.
You're listening to the Voice of Indie.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.